Coming up on Golf Today, the great Mia Hamm joins the program to talk her love of golf, playing this week at Pebble Beach, and the impact the infamous 1999 World Cup team had on women's sports. Plus, Emilia Migliaccio stops by to talk the Augusta National Women's Amateur, how reporting for Golf Channel has changed her perspective on the sport and what athletes she's looked up to throughout her life. And we've had some of the biggest names in our sport step in front of the microphone, including Phil Mickelson. What has been said and what does all this mean for the current and future state of the game? Golf Today starts right now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
It is Golf Today. Shane Bacon with Rex Hoggard. And Rex, we've kind of got golf really all over the place. And we've got a lot of golf to talk about today, but we've got iconic Pebble Beach this week. Always exciting to kind of get to see some of those views.
Some of the views, the part that gets me is the last 2 days we talked to McLemore yesterday, who's at the top of his game in what he does, which is being a great rapper. And then Mia Hamm today, which I have to be honest with you, I'm normally not nervous when I do interviews. I'm nervous doing this interview because she is such an icon.
Rex, you said that interviewing Tiger Woods at this point doesn't make you that nervous.
That's easy.
Interviewing Mia Hamm makes you nervous.
Because of what she meant to that game. I mean, she is. We had the GOAT conversation earlier this week. She's the GOAT, is she not?
I mean, when you look at her record, and we'll go through that in a bit here on the program, but when you go through some of those accomplishments and how many awards that she was presented with throughout her career, I mean, you're talking about a special, special athlete, one of a kind, really.
And what she meant to her sport. You look at sort of Tiger Woods in our sport. I don't think he fully understood exactly the impact he had on a younger generation. And we're really just starting to see that full force now with the likes of the Morikawa and the Victor Hovlands, who talk about, yes, I started playing because Tiger Woods made golf cool. How many people started playing soccer because Mia Hamm made that cool? I can only imagine.
A whole bunch of people. Of course, plenty more golf happening around the world. Saudi Arabia this week, Saudi International. You see the notables in the field. Bryson, Sergio, Dustin Johnson, defending champion Shane Lowry, Phil Mickelson, Louis Oosthuizen, Xander Schauffele, and Henrik Stenson, just to name a few, competing this week. Plenty of players stepping in front of the microphone, including Phil Mickelson.
Obviously, in the Asian Tour, Golf Saudi, we understand, have ambitions for a possible different circuit, a super golf league. Lee Westwood and Dustin Johnson talked a little bit about that this morning in their press conferences. Can you just give us the latest from your point of view, whether you think it's a good concept, whether you've been approached, whatever you can tell us about it, please?
I think everybody is looking at it and seeing parts of it that can really help and benefit their situation, their life, their career. And then there's parts of it that they're probably concerned with. I'm appreciative of the fact that there is competition, and that leverage has allowed for a much better environment on the PGA Tour, meaning we would not have an incentive program like the PIP for the top players. Without this type of competition, we would not have the increase in the FedEx Cup money. We would not have the increase in the Players Championship to $20 million this year if it wasn't for this threat. It was projected to get there in a couple of years. To have a season-long payout for the top 10 guys on the FedEx Cup list came about last year for the first time. At $10 million, it's going to double to $20 million, I think, and that wouldn't be around. And I'm appreciative of the competition. And what my hopes are is that the biggest thing, which are media rights and the way the players have been used for so long, I hope that that changes through the competitive opportunity as well.
Thank you, Phil. Finally, for me, are you able to tell us if you've had a direct offer to play in the Super League eventually?
I think every player has been contacted. I don't think there's a player that hasn't been.
And Rex, this is not the first time we've heard such kind of comments from Phil Mickelson in terms of who he is as a professional golfer and kind of feeling at times a bit undervalued. This isn't the only sport this has come up in. Over the years, you think about Kobe Bryant with the Lakers throughout his career, and you think about LeBron James on the Cavs. You think about Tom Brady on two different teams. I mean, the value of those players was so enormous for those teams and those sports. Phil Mickelson has been saying something similar for many, many years about the superstars in golf and potentially being undervalued.
We have seen this across all sports over the last really couple years, where you're seeing more and more players, not just the stars of the game, but all players across all spectrums being more and more empowered with their own name, image, and likeness, whether that's in the NCAA and what we're seeing in colleges, and certainly now with golf. This goes back to 2 years ago when this first kind of came on everyone's radar. And I remember being at the World Golf Championship in Mexico and talking with a player about what we really didn't understand at the time. And the player telling me that I have no interest in whatever that Super League may become. His bigger interest was, imagine the leverage, and Phil Mickelson used that word not once, not twice, four times today in that interview. Imagine the leverage it gives players. This isn't a league that has any kind of union representation. The representation comes from the Player Advisory Council and the four players on the policy board. Phil Mickelson's never been on the policy board, but this suddenly gives him a voice in all of the players who are in this conversation that they did not have before.
I was just looking, you know, the OWGR website has strength of field that they categorize each and every week. And looking at this week, we showed notable names there to start about the Saudi. And when you look at the ranking this week, the strength of field is 345. Pebble strength of field is 206. The DP World is 76. There have been two events in 2022 to this point with a strength of field higher than the Saudi International. And so when you're looking at simply as a business, when you're looking at this tour and this tournament and what they're trying to accomplish, I would say at this point, 4 years into it, it is successful. You're drawing big names away from tournaments they would typically play in. Think about Phil Mickelson's success at Pebble Beach. Think about Dustin Johnson's success at Pebble Beach, nearly winning a U.S. Open there, and then, of course, playing incredibly well throughout the years at the Pro-Am. They are taking these names from a tour that was the tour to play on, and they're playing somewhere else. So when you kind of dive into it, and this is not morally or ethically or anything you want to dive into there, but when you're looking at this as a business, they have, to this point, succeeded. They've got the biggest names at the golf tournament, playing in this golf tournament. Dustin Johnson's won there twice already early into this. Think about another tournament starting from the ground up 4 or 5 years ago, and it just brings up so many other questions because is this good? You know, we always talk about growing the game. Is this good for golf? Is this good for professional golf? And is this good for the professional golfer?
Well, I'll go back to Greg Norman, who is the CEO of LIV Golf Investments, and they are behind whatever this movement is going to end up being. He mentioned healthy competition, again, not once, not twice, a dozen times yesterday during that press conference. In his mind, absolutely, any competition is going to be good competition. In Phil Mickelson's mind, and I think for most players who are now looking at this objectively and realizing that for the first time in their entire careers, that they do have some sort of negotiating leverage, let's call it, that yes, this is probably a good thing. No, the PGA Tour is probably not very happy that they're in this position. I would argue and I would counter, and I think Commissioner Jay Monahan talked about this late last year at Eastlake during the Tour Championship, that it has made them reevaluate everything that they do. And certainly the Player Impact Program is part of that. Now, we're now talking about maybe having a special series in the fall for the stars. Just to lean into the world golf ranking situation, you pointed out 20 of the top 50 are playing this week in Saudi Arabia as opposed to playing Pebble Beach, which has been part of the PGA Tour schedule for a long, long time. It is part of the fabric of the PGA Tour. Yes, I think when you look at this, it is a success, at least for this 1 week.
Money breaks history. I mean, that's something that we've seen throughout everything, not just golf or not just sport. The thing I've noticed is there seems to be a line in the sand here, and the line in the sand seems to be the young player and the player that's in the later part of their career. Players like Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter and Phil Mickelson. And the decision-making really comes down to what do you want to be and what do you want the future of your golfing career to look like. And if you're a Colin Morikawa or you're even a Rory McIlroy or you're a young player coming out of college, Sam Bennett, who we're going to talk to here in just a bit, there's opportunity, sure, financially to go one way, but historically, all of the benefits and opportunity lie on the PGA Tour.
Well, it goes to Rory's great line, right? I want to be on the right side of history. And in his mind, the right side of history is the PGA Tour and everything they represent. And there does seem to be a generational gap in this particular subject, because you talk about the players that we know, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, Lee Westwoods. These are players towards the end of their career, and this clearly looks very, very attractive to them, as opposed to the Morikawas of the world. Now, nothing has happened up to this point. You can't lean into that enough, pointing out that no one has signed on the dotted line. They can talk about whatever money they're going to offer, but none of it has happened by now. And the other thing I did want to point out about this specific event, most of the players I have talked to signed 3- and 4-year deals to play in this event. And those deals are now coming due. They're phasing out. Back when they signed these deals, this was not on the radar. 3-4 years ago, We weren't talking about whatever a possible Super League could be. We certainly weren't talking about whatever the PIP was going to turn into. The Saudi International was part of the DP World Tour schedule. So things have changed dramatically. I think we're going to get to the point in the next year where we'll probably have larger conversations. But right now, nothing has been done.
Rex, we're golf fans. I mean, we grew up watching the game, loving the game, playing the game, trying to be one of these guys at times. What is the golf fan supposed to take away from this? I mean, these are the people that are watching this show. What are they supposed to take away of certain players chasing money here and certain players interested in money over here? What is the golf fan benefiting as we're kind of looking at other leagues and other opportunities?
I would argue the product would get better for the golf fan, regardless if that product is on the PGA Tour or on whatever the Super League may or may not become down the road. You pointed out how good the field is this week. That's what the fan can enjoy. Whether if you like it or not, there is a larger conversation about, look, there are dark things at play here, and I'm going to leave that to Eamon Lynch because he is much better than that as I am. I think the part that, from the golf fan's perspective, the tour is going to get better, and then whatever this may or may not become, that's going to even make the tour work that much harder.
A shocking development here in the first part of the show. You just gave Eamon Lynch a compliment. That rarely happens, if ever, on air at Golf Channel.
I give him compliments all the time. I just don't like to admit it publicly.
It's very, very smart stuff. Great points there from Rex Hoggard. Much more on this later in the program. When Golf Today returns, an exciting day in the women's game. We got the field for the Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's released. Big names in it. High-ranking players. Talk that next.
Throughout the entire year, my goal was always to end up playing ANWA.
Open the window, set yourself free.
It's the closest to pro golf as you come as an amateur.
You're never alone when you follow dreams.
This young woman is a superstar making.
Breathe it all out now, you have
nicely done. Nicely done.
She is making it look easy right now.
Run, run, you can fly away, you.
It is just incredible to be able to play at Augusta National.
Look out, look out! Oh.
And this is why we love Augusta National.
17-year-old Tsubasa Kajitani, the champion.
Together, we're never alone.
What a special event. Tune in tonight to catch Magnolia Dreams, the story of the 2021 Augusta National Women's Amateur, 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on Golf Channel. And speaking of the Augusta National Women's Amateur, invitations sent out for 2022. 71 players to date have been confirmed for the championship. The event will be held March 30th through April 2nd, prior to the 86th Masters Tournament. The first two rounds will be played at Champions Retreat Golf Club, a lovely 27-hole facility with Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Gary Player Designs. And then on Friday, April 1st, the entire field will play Augusta National for official practice round. And then the final round will then be played April 2nd at Augusta National with the players who made the cut. This, of course, will be broadcast on NBC. You see some of the notables in the field. That includes Emilia Migliaccio, not only the runner-up last year, but now a Golf Channel reporter, kind of bouncing between reporting and playing, a rising star. And when you talk about this event and the strength of this field, how about that? 49 of the top 50 amateurs in the world will be part of the 2022 Augusta National Women's Amateur. Mentioned Emilia, she joins us now. And Emilia, great to see you. You're going back to Augusta after coming so close last year. What is it like receiving this invitation for the third time?
Yeah, I mean, it's another, you know, dream, right? It's something that I've been so excited about, looking forward to. I was actually at the Curtis Cup practice, and we were all talking about hopefully getting our invitations when we come home. But yeah, you know, I'm really excited. I'm excited to have another great week and see, you know, where the golf leads.
Emilia, I'm excited to have you as a colleague, and I'm excited to have you as a competitor again at this event. But I'm curious, as someone who does one of the two things that you're going to be doing that week, and I have to work very, very hard just to even try to be a good reporter, how are you able to do both?
Yeah, I mean, reporting and writing is just something that I've always loved. And luckily, I've had a great team around me. This is the third time I've now done broadcasting, being an on-course reporter, but it's a learning experience. Luckily, I'm someone who, if you throw me into something, I'll figure it out, and I've been doing that so far and really enjoying it.
So when you're on the road reporting, how are you squeezing in practice? Is it early morning practice? Is it late afternoon, you know, kind of range sessions?
Yeah, I haven't quite figured out being able to practice and reporting right now. So I'm just trying to use those 3 or 4 days as a nice break, which is something I usually don't do. And it's actually a great time to kind of observe and reflect. And I get to see a lot of golf. And I really think that observing so much golf and seeing how people are strategic on the golf course in different ways has really helped me in my own game. And then when I come back, I, of course, practice and play.
We all look forward to the traditions that are that week. And, of course, during the Masters and the ANWA, we all have our personal traditions that we enjoy those 2 weeks. What are you looking forward to most going back?
I'm most looking forward to seeing everyone, seeing all my friends. I mean, I have friends from all over the world, all over the country that are going to be playing in ANWA. And I have 3 of my teammates that will be there too. So it's going to be a really special week also representing Wake Forest. But also just really excited to go back to Champion Trichy and Augusta National. I mean, they really treat us like queens. So it's always nice to have such a special week like that.
Amelia, what was your pinch me moment? You know, what was the moment either at Augusta National, getting to the golf course for the first time, maybe even playing the golf course? What was that pinch me moment for you?
I think for me, it was when I stepped up on the tee last year with my mom. That was just, I mean, I was just in awe of the people that were there and just of how special the course looked in those moments and watching it on TV for so many years. So I'm just excited, you know, there's going to be more people because hopefully COVID allows for more people this year and we'll see how it goes. But I mean, I just can't wait.
You said you're going to have some teammates and obviously some friends who will be there with you that week. Having done this, having been in contention there, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I would say that it's all about strategy and course management, especially on Champions Retreat. There's some really hard holes. So just to make sure that you're playing really smart, capitalizing where you want to be. Luckily, I've you know, played it quite a few times, so I can answer as many questions to my teammates and try to, you know, give the best advice I can. But, you know, we're all rooting for each other and hoping for a great week.
Amelia, today is National Girls and Women in Sports Day. Who were some of those athletes you looked up to growing up?
Yeah, I was pretty lucky. I had my mom, who was a superior athlete. She played college golf at the University of Arizona, and her teammate was Annika Sorenstam. So I had 2, you know, exceptional players that I have been able to. I've developed a good relationship with Annika over the years, seeing her at different tournaments. And then I've been with my mom my whole life. So those are some of the 2 people that I've looked up to for, you know, pretty much my whole golf career.
I don't want to get too far ahead on this, but having done the role of a reporter, is that something you're interested in doing as a career?
Definitely. I love reporting. I love storytelling. I love speaking and talking to people and interacting with people. So it's something that I would love to do full time and something that I've just really grown to have a passion for.
Amelia, I didn't realize that your mom was such a genius going to the University of Arizona. Now a big fan of your mother as well. That's a great, great school out there on the West Coast. Appreciate the time. Have a great week.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Well, we've got a great theme throughout today's show as it's National Girls and Women in Sports Day. Some of the images in and around the Augusta National Women's Amateur, one of the special, special events in our sport. Be back after this. Second hour of golf today. Mia Hamm joins the program to talk about Pebble Beach Week, her golf game, and what the 1999 World Cup team meant for women in sports. Plus, we continue to celebrate National Girls and Women in Sports Day. We talk about some of those impactful women that have done so much for this great sport. Plus, we've got files, lots and lots of files. We thumb through it to find the one on Jason Day and talk his success at Pebble Beach and the recent form that got him in the hunt at Torrey Pines. Golf today just continuing on and on. Looks in and around Pebble Beach. It is, in fact, Pebble Beach Week. It is the week where you go on your phone and you look through your photos and you find the best one you took at Pebble Beach, and then you post it on your Instagram. That's the rule.
Did you do that?
I haven't done it yet. Week is not over yet, though.
Okay. Looks pretty menacing out there right now. That picture looks a little scary.
Is that a live shot? Are we going to have some weather this week at Pebble Beach? No matter if it's windy, if it's cool, if it's cold, if it's warm, Jason Day plays well at Pebble Beach each and every year.
You are banking on him top fiving. Is it top five or top 10?
Listen, I started at top 20, and as the hours have gone along today, I think we're sneaking into top five category.
You have yourself convinced. All right, good. No, that's good.
1 hour down today in the program. We've talked a lot. We've hit on a lot of things, a lot of interviews. What stood out to you, Rex?
Well, I think when you look back at everything that happened at the Augusta National Women's Amateur over the last few years, the field coming out today, the names. We saw the tweet from Brentley Romine. 49 of the top 50 players in the world are going to play in that. And that just is a testament to how important that event has become to the golf schedule.
We talk about women in sports today. We give a lot of praise to the LPGA, as we should. We love the LPGA on this show and at this network. I mean, you talk about Augusta National and what they have done in recent years to promote women's golf, to promote the women's game. It's been very, very special to watch.
It really has, and I think we're going to talk about this later, about some of the most impactful things that have happened in golf when it comes to bringing girls to the game, bringing women to the game. I think the Augusta National Women's Amateur ranks right up in there.
We talked Jason Day. Talked about opening the Jason Day file. Just about that time. Let's look at the Jason Day file. This is a guy that is coming to form here in 2022, going back to 2010, AT&T Byron Nelson, Jason Day. Wins, big fist pump, 10 under par, wins by two. That's a celebration, Rex.
He almost took out his caddy's last swing coach.
Big trophy would not be the first Jason Day would take home. Of course, 2015 PGA Championship. A tap-in and a victory over Jordan Spieth. What a special moment there for Jason Day and his family.
And the emotion. There you see, just sobbing, not crying, not getting emotional, just sobbing. You don't see that very often for PGA Tour players. You get an idea of exactly how much that meant to him and how hard he had to work to get there.
Good news. It's another big trophy. Better have a big house if you have all those big trophies. We'll go to 2016 players. Taps that in to win the players as well. I mean, you talk about the prime of a player's career. I mean, he's winning major championships. He's winning at the Players' Championship. Went all over the place.
I like to see the evolution of Dash over the years, because he went from being an infant, now he ran on the green there. He's going to be a teenager by the time Dad's done.
This at the Wells Fargo 2018. Another putt, another win, another trophy. Two shots at 12 under par for Jason Day. This time, look at that, he got a jacket this time too.
He's lucky he's got the big house.
Big house, big jacket, big trophies. Of course, Jason Day, throughout his career, has battled injuries. This at the 2020 Arnold Palmer Invitational. Talking rules officials, had to call it a day early. And this has been a big part of the career of Jason Day, the struggles with injury, the struggles with his back. But, of course, nice to see what has happened here in 2022. This at the Farmers Insurance Open last week. This at the 14th. A little magic there from 118. Look at Jason Day worldwide since that 2018 Wells Fargo Championship, 77 starts, just a single top three finish. That coming last week at the Farmers Insurance Open. And that is it for top tens for Jason Day, one of the best players in the world. It hasn't been the ride we thought we'd see since 2018. Been very nice to see Jason Day back in form. Jason Day catching up with the media.
Things are looking up. I just got to really just keep working hard. I'm in that stage of like trying to, you know, make these things more concrete. Mm-hmm. And then if I can do that, then I'll be in contention a lot more. And then the confidence comes back. And then when the confidence comes back, hopefully I win
the last
5-10 times a year.
Makes sense if we show. A smiling Jason Day's played really well at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am the last 5 years. You see there, just consistent, consistent, consistent golf.
So that's why top 10 or top 20? Where are you leaning in on this one?
They offer top 20. PointsBet offers it. I think it's an option to play. But when you talk about a golfer like Jason Day in a place like Pebble Beach and the success you see Jason Day having, I mean, it's got to be an exciting time for a player to roll into this golf course at this time.
It has to be an exciting time because of the success he's had there, and we will go over it. And look, this is I think you said it earlier in the show, it's horses for courses. And he clearly is comfortable here, and he feels like he has the type of game to compete. Larger picture for me, and I had an opportunity to talk with him a little while in Palm Springs just 2 weeks ago. And it was fascinating to me that he spent the offseason working with Chris Como, his swing coach. And this wasn't really about swing. This is about trying to come up with a way that he can remain upright for 72 holes. Since the day I met him in 2016, he was a teenager in Australia, and he was still playing amateur golf. He was injured at the time. He was talking to me about an injured shoulder and an injured elbow. It's been that way ever since then. I mean, we can go through the litany of injuries and things that he's had to deal with throughout the course of his career. I still think he has the talent. I still think he has the drive to do it. If he and Chris Como can find a way to make sure that he can swing around these limitations, these injuries, he still has the ability to be a very, very special player. But in my mind, it's kind of still of a big if.
I mean, we look at the results, you look at the way he has played. I mean, it hasn't been a kind of a great run for Jason Day. Not the only player to kind of go through a slump. And we obviously went through this with Jordan Spieth, went through this with Lydia Ko. Nice to see those players finding form once again in 2021 into 2022. But for Jason Day at Pebble Beach, we talk about the iron play and the importance of iron play. And we always talk about how distance has become an obsession for these professional golfers. But for Jason Day, it's about finding greens. I mean, if Jason Day can find greens and lean on that putter that was just a weapon for him throughout his career, that's the important part. I talk a lot about this with Colin Morikawa as well, as Colin Morikawa in terms of accuracy when you're hitting fairways is more important. Because if Colin Morikawa hits a fairway, he gets to lean on the iron play, generational iron player. And for Jason Day, if he finds greens, if he can hit a fairway and get the ball on the green, he gets to lean on the club that is the most important in his bag.
And to go back to why you should be confident with the top 20 this week, because I will point out that if you go back to, let's say, the magical season for Jason Day was 2015. We're talking about the year he won five times. We're talking about the year when he won the PGA Championship. The things he did the best, middle of the road when it came to ball striking. He was never a great ball striker, always had plenty of power off the tee. But if he was just middle of the road with approach, fairways hit, greens hit, I think that gave him an opportunity to lean on that putting, which is so important to him. And again, you go back to last week at Torrey Pines, that's exactly what he did. He was squarely middle of the road when you're talking about ball striking, but he was seventh in strokes gained off the green. The stat that stood out to me is 48 of 51 in putts from 10 feet and in. That, to me, is machine-like.
You saw there Jason Day, top 20 is minus 155 Rex, 10 top 25s and 12 starts at Pebble Beach, 8 top 10s. He has been a machine. Even during the weeks and the years where things aren't going Jason Day's way, it's almost like Jordan Spieth at Augusta when he drives through the gate, when he gets into the Pebble Beach area and sees that first tee, it seems like he switches back to prime Jason Day.
I think it does. And I think the bigger picture here is if Jason needs a paradigm of hope, it's right there. He has been friends and he has talked to, had the ear of Tiger Woods, maybe more so than any other player throughout the course of his career, which is certainly helpful because Tiger has gone through these same things. Tiger worked with Chris Como specifically to do the exact same thing that Jason Day is doing now. And you can make an argument that it panned out on some level. Now, he wasn't with Como when he emerged out the other side and won his Zozo and then won the Masters for the 15th major. But there were still elements in there. And I think that's what has drawn Jason Day to here. And you look at him over the course of his career, I think the injuries have just compounded themselves. He's always swung very, very hard. I mean, if you had one criticism, you would probably look at the fact he didn't have, let's say, the off-speed pitch is what we would call it. He didn't really have that. He had every other element of the game, but he always struggled with the short wedge shots. And I think part of that is there was nothing halfway. He always attacked the golf ball, and there has to be something in there that speaks to this is why he's probably dealing with more and more injuries.
Someone that's been paying attention to this segment, I can only imagine, is Trevor Immelman. Of course, a big President's Cup year coming up. And if you're Jason Day, I mean, you're an important figure in the President's Cup. You're an important figure here if you can find a way to get that consistent game back, because the team's going to need a player like Jason Day, a leader, one of the top-ranked players in the world, someone that has seen up close what it takes to win major championships. Jason Day, when you're looking at a President's Cup, and the Internationals need a victory, I think we both can agree that rooting for the Internationals is the way to go if you're in golf media. We want this thing to feel a bit more competitive. Yeah. For Jason Day, he has got to put himself in that leadership role, if you will, to help this team kind of gel together.
Absolutely. Trevor Immelman was in Palm Springs 2 weeks ago, and we were on the range before the final round, and he was talking about this. Adam Scott, we're not sure if he's going to make that team. He has been the elder statesman and the locker room leader, let's call him, on the course. There's no guarantee he's going to make that team. The next person in line would be Jason Day. Right now, there's no guarantee he's going to make that team. But you're absolutely right. Trevor's looking in his direction, thinking, if he could make it, I could build a team around him. You're right. I just want this to be competitive. We all just want it to be competitive.
And, of course, has had some success on the golf course as well, has Jason Day. Nice to have a player show up at a golf course that he understands and knows oh so well. Don't go anywhere because we've got a very, very special interview coming your way. Two-time FIFA Women's World Cup champion Mia Hamm joining the program. She's going to play at Pebble Beach this week. We're going to ask her some questions before she tees it off.
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can. Had enough?
Let's go.
Anything you can be, I can be greater.
Ready, stop.
Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
I'm not stopping.
Yes, I'm not stopping.
I'm not stopping.
No, you can't.
Yes, I can.
Been a lot of GOAT talk this week in sports. Rafa Nadal, Tom Brady. Don't sleep on Mia Hamm, two-time Olympic gold medalist, two-time FIFA Women's World Cup champion, named U.S. Soccer Female Athlete of the Year 5 years in a row. First woman inducted into the World Football Hall of Fame. On Wheaties boxes, now into golf. A big moment there for Mia Hamm. And Mia joins us now on this program. Mia is going to be playing in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am this week out at Pebble. And Mia, today is National Women in Sports Day. You are a part of one of the greatest moments in women's sports history. How often are you having girls and young women reach out to you about 1999 and how that pushed them into sport?
Well, it's, you know, with social media, it's a lot easier to kind of connect with those people. But even last night, several people came up to me during the event and just thanked myself as well as my teammates for inspiring them to dream bigger. And I think for us, that was, you know, when you're a young player, you don't realize it. But as we got older, especially into the 99 World Cup, just the opportunity to kind of change the landscape of women's sports was something that we kind of fully embraced and wanted to accomplish every single day.
Mia, very, very similar question. As far as Tiger Woods has talked about, he was aware when he was at the height of his powers of inspiring the next generation, but it wasn't until he got towards the latter years of his career that he really started to understand the importance that he had on that generation. Was it similar for you?
I think so, because, you know, we, early on when I played with the national team, we really weren't on TV, and I think the opportunity to reach more people corresponds to visibility. And I think the 96 Olympics really changed that for our team, where we became kind of household names outside of the soccer community. And there was a desire for people to come watch us play, both in person, but especially on TV. And once that was established, I think we could see it kind of parallels the growth of the game and our opportunities to really help more young girls kind of aspire to greater things.
All right, Mia, it's Pebble Beach week. You're out at Pebble Beach. How is the golf game currently?
Well, it's, as we all are, it's a work in progress. And but I've enjoyed every minute I've been here. Yesterday, I was lucky enough to play with Chris Stroud and Vaughn Taylor, and they were fantastic. You know, just seeing them swing and kind of their approach to the game just calmed me down a little bit. But, you know, I'm grateful for the Monterey Peninsula Foundation for inviting me. And, you know, I want to play well. I'm a competitor. But in the end, this is not my day job, and thank goodness.
We just showed the commercial with you and Michael Jordan in the Gatorade commercial, and he has talked about in the past about how he was able to channel that inner competitor into golf. Are you able to do that, or are there other areas of your life that you still are able to channel what made you so great as a soccer player?
Well, grocery shopping is one thing that I'm very competitive in. No. You know, I think sometimes I need to give myself a break on the golf course because, you know, this is such a technical game, and that, you know, that's years and years of kind of layering on top of one another. So when I started playing, I had a couple lessons, but more is just my athleticism kind of took over. And so some of my bad habits in my swing kind of come forward when I'm nervous. So I just, you know, I keep telling myself, and a lot of my friends have texted me, they're like, you know, really just enjoy the walk. And that's what I'm going to try to do.
It's a pretty walk out at Pebble Beach. Mia, I was reading a story from 2019 about you and this dreaded 7-iron and a lesson every golfer eventually learns. Yeah. The harder you try in this godforsaken game, the tougher it is. Can you enlighten the audience on that moment with the 7-iron?
So I was playing at UNC's course, and it was a par 3, and I shanked my 7-iron, and I kept turning, and somehow the club just slipped out of my hands. It wasn't thrown by me, of course, but it landed in this kind of thicket bush, and it was either live without a 7-iron or swallow your pride and go get it. And so I crawled through this thicket bush, and I came out with scratches, and I was bleeding all over my arms. And, from then on, I was like, you just, if you want to be good, you gotta practice. And, you know, at that time I wasn't able to practice that much, but, it's a humbling game. It doesn't care what you did the day before. I remember playing after the 96 Olympics, and I kept talking to my golf ball. I was like, do you not know what happened 2 days ago? And it didn't, it really didn't care.
To do the comparison here, I don't know how, you said you want to take it easy on yourself on the golf course and be a little bit nicer when it comes to your golf game. But is the pressure similar or not even close to what you went through? You talked about the Olympics and the World Cup and all of the great things you've been able to do in the game.
Well, the hardest part for me is the ball's just sitting still. I was used to constant motion. So a lot of the times you didn't have as much time to think. You just more reacted. And I think a lot of people will tell you that golf gives you so much time to think and grind over each shot that, and that brings tension into your swing, and tension in your swing is never a good thing.
All right, Mia, I once did an interview with a guy named Shane, and I got it thrown to me from a guy named Shane. And this actually is more important of a moment. You have Mia Hamm, you've got Shane Bacon, and you've got Rex Hoggard. So you've got a hog and a bacon and ham. So we wanted to play a little game with you, if you're okay with that. We're going to play Hamming It Up. So we got some questions for you here. First question, is Mia Hamm a remote control hog? Do you hog the remote control?
Yes.
Absolutely. Okay. Now here's a question. Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry, Mia.
No, it has my name on it, or at least I think it does.
All right. So this is a bit of a personal question. So, you can answer if you don't, but do you hog the bed? Are you somebody that hogs the bed?
No.
Stay in your space. Stay in your portion of the bed. Yes.
Yes.
Rex, you got one?
I do, but I'm not quite sure how I feel about this one. Are you bacon or are you ham?
Bacon.
That's smart choice.
Makes sense.
I think that's a smart choice. All right. I don't know if you're a Harry Potter person. I don't know if you've read Harry Potter or watched the movies. But what house, if you did watch Harry Potter, what house would you be in at Hogwarts? Hogwarts.
Yeah, exactly. I'd probably say Gryffindor.
Listen, we had a debate this morning if you were a Harry Potter person, and I defended you, Mia Hamm. I said you've read Harry Potter. You have to. You travel. You read books.
Read
it or
watch the movies.
Well, we're going to go with
read.
Okay. Well,
I've read a couple. My daughters are huge fans, so we've watched everyone.
All right, Mia, when you were playing soccer, when you were really competitive, would you have considered yourself a ball hog?
No.
Not a ball hog.
Not at all.
Willing to share. Well, Mia, we really appreciate the time. A reminder, you can catch Mia Hamm and other celebrities in action at the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. Coverage gets going tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern on Golf. Mia, we really appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, sticking with our theme, it's National Girls and Women in Sports Day. Mickey Wright, one of the most important names in women's golf, owns 82, count them, 82 tournament titles, and ranked second in all-time career LPGA wins, served as president of the LPGA, and was inducted into the World Golf Hall of Fame in 1976. Golf Today returns right after this. Back on Golf Today, we've had a front row seat to Michelle Wee West's career from the age of 10 when she burst on the scene, becoming the youngest player to qualify for a USGA Amateur Championship. She has won 5 times on the LPGA Tour, including the 2014 U.S. Women's Open. Also, she has had a huge impact in growing the women's game, notably her Hoodies for Golf campaign, which was designed to raise awareness of the LPGA's commitment to change the face of golf and generate support for 2 important nonprofits. Celebrities, athletes, fans jumping on board wearing the hoodies all around town and on social media. And we have an update. Roberta Bauman posting this on social media, an executive for the LPGA. More than 16,000 hoodies have been sold since April of 2021. Over $350,000 have been raised, 1.9 billion, not million, billion impressions across social media and social media channels. As we've mentioned throughout the show, it's National Girls and Women in Sports Day, a good time to remind everybody of some of the great athletes in our sport throughout the years.
Michelle Wee West is at the top of that list. It's amazing when you think of the arc of her career. It started so long ago, and she's accomplished so much. And when you read 5 victories on the LPGA Tour, it dawned on me that she has had such a cultural significance, not just within golf, but beyond golf, just bringing girls, women to sports, specifically golf in this particular case. It's such an outsized influence. She would be atop any list. It's been amazing.
When you look, like, kind of through my lifetime, looking at some of the LPGA players that I've loved to follow, Morgan Pressel comes to mind. Of course, Michelle comes to mind. Aria Jatanagarn and her win there at the U.S. Women's Open. Erica Blassberg, Irene Cho, a couple of buddies of mine that I caddied for back in the day on the LPGA Tour, kind of opened my eyes to what the LPGA Tour was all about and how much talent was out there. I think until you go out there and really experience an LPGA Tour event, maybe you're not quite, maybe you don't quite know just how good and talented the LPGA Tour is, and kind of deeper into some of the mini tours as well. But, you know, the name that comes to mind when you really talk about impact is Saori Park. When you talk about people that have made enormous impacts in golf, 5 major wins, 39 professional titles, but that's not really what matters. No. It's what she did for the game of golf. Let me just take you through some quotes about Saori from some of the players that we followed throughout their career. Birdie Kim saying, Saori is just like Tiger is to every American kid. We all wanted to be her. IK Kim, I dream of doing what Saori has done. When Saori won the U.S. Open, I took golf seriously and hoped to play as a professional someday. When she won the U.S. Open, I took up the game of golf. The quotes continue, that from Ji Young Lee. And then I thought this was just really special. Erica Adelson, ESPN The Magazine, said this about Saori Park. In Korea, Saori Park is not just a star, not just an icon. She is a metaphor. And when you think about impacts in golf, I'm not sure there's somebody that has impacted modern golf more than Saori Park.
Look at any LPGA leaderboard, and they were all inspired to play because of what she was able to do at that point in her career. And again, I will go back to the same thing I said about Michelle, about an outsized influence. At the Olympics last year, Saori was part of the Korean team. And there were a lot of situations where Paul McGinley was a part of the Irish team. Well, he was there enjoying himself, and I'm sure that he enjoyed being around the others. Saori Park had an influence on that team. They listened to what she said. She was actively coaching them. It was really, really cool to see. I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. Annika Sörenstam, for all the things she accomplished in her career, a Hall of Fame career, and we all marveled at that. We talked about this, the GOAT conversation earlier in the week. If you see it firsthand over the course of your life, there is a recency bias. So that's why I would lean into Tiger Woods over Jack Nicklaus. And they're always fun conversations. But for me personally, it was covering Colonial, the year she went and played, and just the idea of she had so much pressure on her, and there were so many people doubting that she should be out there competing, and it was just the perfect storm. She was at a point in the game where she was comfortable with what she had done on the LPGA Tour, and she was at a point in her life where she was comfortable putting herself into this arena, knowing that she was going to get all of this criticism, and she stood up and she took it all and she played brilliantly.
When you talk about pushing the game forward and embracing, you know, some differences in the game of golf, I mean, you can look beyond some of the players out there. I think of Mike Wan, who's going to hate being brought up in this conversation. But what Mike Wan has done for the LPGA Tour in women's golf has been such a humongous impact in Augusta National, something we brought up earlier in the show, embracing this Augusta National Women's Amateur and putting it on television, letting the amateur players out on Augusta National. It's such a special week, and it's a special tournament to watch each and every year.
It really is. And when you talk about Michael Wan, I had the opportunity to meet him really for the first time. And I'd always wondered, everyone loves him so much, and I couldn't really figure out why. And then I had the opportunity of playing 18 holes with him at Torrey Pines for U.S. Open Media Day last year. And after that 18 holes, I got it. I completely understood. We both know leadership can be lonely. But in this particular case, Mike Wann is widely, almost universally applauded for being, wow, he's the guy. He figured out a way to make the LPGA Tour just not relevant, but important to the larger conversation of professional golf and golf for women. The one that you pointed out that I find fascinating as we go down the list, though, is Billy Payne in Augusta National and what he did. The club allowed its first female member under his leadership. It began the drive, chip, and putt under his leadership, and it initiated the ANWA, which I think are all three things that had a huge impact for growing the game across women, girls, but even younger kids. My kids started playing because of drive, chip, and putt. It's just anecdotal, but I think the impact that he had cannot be forgotten.
It's such a celebration of the sport. You see past Masters champions out there for drive, chip, and putt. You see so much celebration around social media when you get a chance to watch the Augusta National Women's Amateur. We cannot wait for the 2022 edition of that. And today we're celebrating National Girl and Women in Sports Day. Threw this up on social media. Who are your favorite golfers in the women's game, past or present, and why? Your answers not just could be featured on the show, they're going to be. We're going to feature them on the show. LPGA underway this week with the LPGA Drive on Championship at Crown Colony. Coverage tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern on Peacock. Some of the notable players in the field this week: Jessica Korda, Nelly Korda, Lexi Yuka Sasso, Patty Tabatanikat, MB Park, just to name a few. Of course, Jennifer Kupcho, inaugural winner of the Augusta National Women's Amateur. When Golf Day returns, we're joined by a stud. I'm just going to say it. Texas A&M Sam Bennett. He's an Aggie, he's a Texan, and he's a confident young man. We'll chat with him next. Back on Golf Today, let's take a look at the PGA Tour University Velocity Global Rankings, Rex.
If I look at that list, the one that stands out to me is Cole Hammer. I was covering the U.S. Open qualifier, and he didn't get in. He later got in because of withdrawal, and the anger and emotion showed me so much that day.
A lot of Texans on this board. You see Texas Tech, Sandy Scott, Cole Hammer there, University of Texas. When we go to 5 through 1, you see even more. How about Sam Bennett from Texas A&M, Pearson Cootie, still injured, but still number 2 on the Velocity Global Rankings.
I'll start at the top because last week I was going through some transcripts, and it is difficult to impress PGA Tour players as a rule, and I was amazed how many PGA Tour players thought Sam Bennett was the real deal in Dubai when he was playing on the DP World Tour.
Sam Bennett kind of rubbing shoulders with the professional golfers over the last year or so. He leads the Velocity Global Rankings. Just a look at his profile: Sprint International individual champion last year, Ping, first team All-American. He had 4 wins in 2021, U.S. Arnold Palmer Cup team member as well. And you see the scoring average, that's the second lowest in Texas A&M program history. And we welcome in Sam Bennett. And Sam, you referred to professional golf as a hard school last year at the Texas Open. Did school feel a little easier this time around?
Yeah, for sure. It was a lot easier.
When you look at what some of the players last week said about you, I'm talking about some of the comments I read from Paul Casey and some of the other players who had a chance to meet you and spend some time with you. What do you come away with that? I mean, you obviously have done this before. You played in the Texas Open, but that seems like a much larger scale in Dubai.
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bigger, but I definitely felt more comfortable. Like you said, at Valero, I was, I was pretty nervous, and I wasn't ready for the, big stage. But, this week coming into Dubai, I was ready. My game was ready. And once I got out there, I felt pretty comfortable, and that's why I'm pretty disappointed in how I finished, because, I felt like I belonged this week, and just, kind of how golf is, just fell a little short, but it was a good experience.
All right, Sam, you'd hinted at some of the things you wanted to do off the golf course last week in Dubai: skydiving, skiing indoors, hit up the tallest building in the world. How many did you check off the list?
Yeah, I didn't go skydiving. I tried to book it, but you had to book like way in advance. And then we did go to the world's tallest building, which is, it was really tall. It was cool. It was cool being up there. And then what else we do? We went to the world's biggest water park, which was, it was nice being like a little kid riding those rides. That was pretty fun. And then we went to all three malls. The malls were just huge, and we spent way too much money at Lulu, me, my girlfriend, and my cousin. We went to all three
stores. They have those in the States, Sam.
Yeah, I know.
They have those in the States. You know that, right?
Yeah, they have one right by my house, but it gets me every time. But then we went to aquariums and zoos, and we got to be up close with penguins. But, we got to explore the city a lot after Saturday and Sunday since I wasn't playing in the field.
Now, I have to tell you, I have mad respect for you now. I've been to the top of the Burj Khalifa, and it's so intimidating to go to the top of that and look down because it towers over everything else. But I have to ask, having come from where you come from, Madisonville, which is a small town, to Dubai, which is probably one of the most largest sprawling towns, what was your overall take?
I still like Texas and the small town life a lot better. But, I mean, it was cool. Yeah, like I said, it felt like I was kind of in a movie. I mean, nothing really looked real or seemed real, especially when I was out there, you know, playing. And I look over and Rory and Morikawa and all them just walking down the fairways. And I look up and it looks like I'm, I don't know, in a movie. And everything was just pretty surreal. But, I mean, Dubai was cool, but I like Texas a lot. And I'm happy to stay here for a while, but I guess our team leaves for Hawaii in like 8 days, so I'm going to be gone for a little bit again.
Sam, you won four times in 2021. What are your big picture goals for 2022?
To win every tournament I teed up in. I mean, they asked me what my expectations were for coming into Dubai, and, you know, I was trying to win. I mean, I don't tee it up to try to get top 10, to try to make this cut, you know, I mean, I feel like I belong with, you know, anybody in the world. And especially after last week, I mean, I felt really, like I said, I felt really comfortable out there. There's no nerves. My thoughts were good. I mean, everything, it was like I was playing, I texted my brother, it was like I was playing at my 9-hole course in Madisonville. I mean, I was just out there kind of chilling, but, you know, unfortunately it didn't really show. But, yeah, my expectations are high this spring. I mean, I think I'm going to win Hawaii next week. I mean, I already got kind of my mind made up like that. And, you know, I want to win, like I said, every tournament I teed up in. And, you know, for our team, I definitely want to, you know, win SECs. I want a conference ring pretty bad. And then, you know, we're able to host regionals at our home track here in College Station. So that's pretty exciting. And, I mean, I think I'm going to, you know, I have the Aggie, which we host, and then we host regionals again at the course I've been playing at since I was 14. So I think there's two good shots right there. And then I love Sea Island where we play conference, love that course. And, you know, hopefully I just get a chance to win nationals this year. You know, we fell a little short last year, but, I think we're in a pretty good spot going into the spring.
Sam, how do you carry that relaxed feeling you said last week among some of the best players in the world in Dubai into this season and make that an advantage for you that maybe those around you don't have?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I learned a lot. It comes from experience. I mean, everything I've been through with, you know, my dad passing to, you know, struggling with depression, anxiety, overcoming that. And then, you know, just some stuff off the golf course to, you know, realizing that, you know, I'm just really happy to be able to play this game that I love and just to enjoy every aspect of it, you know. It just kind of helps knowing I'm out there just chilling. There's no need to be uptight, you know. I've learned that, you know, nerves and pressure kind of, they really come from how I see it is what you think people are going to view you as, like, dang, what if I hit this shot? What are people going to think? Like, I've kind of learned to just, like, really not care what anybody thinks and just kind of go out there and do me and stay relaxed. But yeah, I definitely feel comfortable out there. And, you know, it helped a lot playing in Valero last spring, because when I was teeing it up in the Aggie coming down the stretch trying to win a golf tournament, or the Spirit in November trying to win a golf tournament, I mean, there's really no nerves there, because, I mean, I felt all the nerves in Valero and nothing can compare to that. And I mean, there's no nerves in Dubai. So I think, you know, really going forward, I'm my golf game's pretty relaxed when I get under pressure, and hopefully when I get to Bay Hill at the API, it's the same way, and I really think it's going to be like that.
Sam, when you see players like Colin Morikawa and Victor Hovland, who 3 years ago were in your position, you know, rising to top positions in the world rankings, do you look at those players as inspiration and say, I can do this in 3 or 4 years myself?
For sure, yeah. I mean, they're great. I did see that stat everywhere where 2.5 years ago they're, you know, playing in college and now they're top three in the world. I mean, that's pretty incredible what they've been able to accomplish over the past 2.5 years. And yeah, I haven't played with Morikawa yet, but I played with Hovland my freshman year at the Floridian. We played 36 holes together, and I mean, he's definitely got a lot better and progressed. I mean, and I feel like I can do the same way. But yeah, they definitely, you know, give me some whatever, you know, I can, if they can do it, I feel like I can. I mean, they're in the, you know, like I said, my same boat with as far as skill level and experience. So yeah, that definitely gives me some, you know, leverage going forward to see what they've accomplished.
All right, Sam, I have a Texas question for you. Is it possible to drive through Madisonville and not get a ticket? Because I'm pretty sure I'm 100% in my career driving through Madisonville.
Yeah, no, you got to be. There's actually two guys on my team that have gotten tickets over the past 6 months going through Madisonville. Yeah, it drops to like 30 the whole way through that town. But yeah, they don't mess around there. You do gotta watch out.
Yeah, 20 miles an hour. Just go 20 through Madisonville. That is the rule. Sam, we really appreciate the time. Congrats on all the success. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.